Earth and Sky.
In biology, we have this direct affront against science, which is this nonsense called creationism.
You are listening to biologist P.Z. Myers, and this is Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science. Dr. Myers writes the blog Pharyngula for scienceblogs.com. In a discussion with Earth Sky's Jorge Salazar, Dr. Myers spoke about why he feels scientists should blog and why he doesn't shy away from controversial subjects like creationism and evolution.
Dr. Myers, welcome to Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science.
Glad to be here.
Now, why do you feel it's important as a scientist to engage non-scientists through your blog, Pharyngula?
I've long felt that, science shouldn't be a closed club, that what we have to do as, as an intellectual obligation, as part of the intellectual community in this country, is we have to get out there and talk to everybody. So, yeah, everybody belongs in the conversation, not just the scientists.
And tell us your thoughts on people's trust in science itself and in scientists. Do you agree that people don't trust scientists as much as they should? Why or why not?
Well, that's a tricky one, because should they trust scientists? I mean, should we trust anybody? I'm a hardcore skeptic, so, I don't believe anything anybody says. But in American society, I think there is a fair amount of at least respect for the authority of science. For instance, one really simple example is, you watch TV, you look at the commercials, and they'll say, 9 out of 10 dentists favor this toothpaste or whatever. That's symptomatic of a general trust in the authority of people who do clinical research, who do actual research, who think, who publish, who do science. And it's a small thing, but it's a matter of I think what the people generally are thinking.
And I'd like for you to maybe tell us a little bit about your blog, Pharyngula. What is it all about? What are some of the things that go through your mind as you're putting this blog together?
It's about everything. I started it some years ago in 2003, and it's because I live in a small town. I live in a very tiny community out here in western Minnesota, and I wanted an outlet, something where I could just put my thoughts as I was going along. And as I mentioned in the first question, I felt a public discussion about science is important. So I thought I would try this brand new blogging thing and just sort of throw out my ideas and see what people would say and, see if people would even notice. And I was very surprised that people were very enthusiastic about it and came back very quickly. And I got lots and lots of questions. And it just grew and grew and grew.
One of the things that resonates, I guess, with people who read your blog regularly are some of the themes in it. And one of those themes is personal beliefs about things that are not in the sphere necessarily of science. Tell us a little bit about blogging about atheism. Why is that important for you to blog about this?
Well, I disagree first that it's not in the sphere of science. That, what science is all about is exploring the natural world and pursuing what we can know. And what we can know from what we observe in the natural world, and this is particularly acute because I'm a biologist, right? I study evolution, is that there is no design, there's no intent, that much of what happens in the natural world is driven by chance processes. And so it's a natural conclusion of science that there isn't an overriding guiding principle, that no, there's no being who watches every sparrow falls and sparrow fall and catches them or mourns over them or anything. It's just things happen, and they happen all the time. So, this gradually emerged also because much of my early writing was about creationism. In biology, we have this direct affront against science, which is this nonsense called creationism. And there, of course, the motivation is religion. Religion has become the enemy of good science, in the United States at least, that what we have is an active fundamentalist movement that directly combats scientific conclusions by claiming that religion supports them. So, yeah, it's been a growing issue in the blog because it so directly impacts so many of the things I talk about. When I'm writing about developmental biology, for instance, which is my specialty, and I'm writing about the molecular evidence for all these interesting regulatory pathways that have evolved over millions and millions of years, there's always somebody who comes along and says, well, no, that doesn't say anything. You can't argue that, you know, that God created the earth 6,000 years ago, or some of them say God created billions of years ago, but God did everything. And that's not the evidence. That's not what the science is telling us.
In thinking about science and religion, do you see any possible reconciliation between these two, I guess, ways of looking at the world, or are they fundamentally at odds?
They're definitely at odds. That what we have in science is a procedure, right? It's an open, inquiring procedure into how the world works. And we will take any answer, wherever it comes from, and we'll apply it. That, for instance, you could imagine that if I were doing some investigations and I discovered that there actually was evidence for God, then I would leave my atheism. I would go in that direction. But with religion, you're starting from a fixed point, and you're saying, this is the answer. Now we have to get out there and find the evidence to support it. And that's the antithesis of good science. So no, I don't think they can be reconciled at all.
I'd like your thoughts on evolution itself, and what would you say is the biggest misconception that people have today about evolution?
There's a couple of them, actually. Probably the biggest one I run into all the time is people who think that evolution does not apply to them, that the human race is done evolving, that we reached some plateau, you know, 100,000 years ago or whatever, and we're just done with that whole business, and it doesn't affect us anymore. And that's not true, of course, that, you know, there's all kinds of things that are affecting our evolutionary state all the time. Just simple drift is one, that we're continually acquiring new mutations, that there's increasing diversity. As, you know, as human beings boom in population, that means that our particular population has a much larger representation of new mutations and new combinations of alleles. And so evolution is going on actively in human populations. The other thing is, as you mentioned earlier, is many people think that evolution is, if not directed by an entity, it's directed by natural selection, and that evolution always homes in on some optimal combination of characteristics. And that's also not the case. A lot of the details of evolution are entirely driven by chance, that the particular attributes we have aren't necessarily optimal in any sense.
Like, for example, I mean, could you...
Oh, that, you know, there's a lot of details of our form that, one that's commonly mentioned is things like the recurrent laryngeal nerve. We've got a nerve in our necks that loops way down and then back up because it's following a developmental pathway, and we've changed our form since we were fish, and so it ends up taking this very circuitous route that's completely inappropriate. And you know, if you're an engineer, you think of lots of ways to shorten that and make it very simple. But because, again, we're going through this developmental process, we keep rebuilding it exactly the same way every time.
Now, we have a question from Twitter. San Baji would be very interested to hear your thoughts on the Australopithecus Sediba find and the Ardipithecus ramidus 2. Now, these are the remains, 2-million-year-old bones that were recently found in Africa of a possible new lineage of human.
Yeah, you know, I haven't read too much about them yet. I just got the paper sitting on my desk and was browsing through it. My primary interests in evolution are a little bit more abstract. I'm more interested in invertebrates and really early events in evolutionary history. But these look very interesting. I mean, what they are is a couple more data points. And it also makes me kind of envious that there's a peculiarity going on here in that one of the best understood lineages in evolution is the human lineage. And it's because people invest so much time and effort in looking for our ancestors, so there's kind of a personal interest in it. So what I see these as interesting data points on a very complicated branching diagram of human ancestry, that's what they're really telling us, that, as I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of chance involved in evolution, and what these represent is two distant branches that show that, no, there was no straight arrow from, you know, a common ancestor between humans and chimpanzees to the modern humans. What we did is the human lineage explored space in evolution, and these are wonderful examples of two of those exploratory points.
You've been listening to P.Z. Myers, who writes the popular blog Pharyngula for scienceblogs.com. He's an associate professor of biology at the University of Minnesota, Morris. To subscribe to this and other free science interview podcasts, visit the subscribe page at earthsky.org. I'm Deborah Bird. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.